Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for coming to see our presentation that we have coming up for you, a really great presentation on brewery insurance from John Hofer. Before we get started, a couple of housekeeping things. My name is Matt Stinchfield. I'm from Plowshare Brewing in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I'm also the chair of the Brewery Safety Subcommittee. If you've been following the BA Forum and reading on Tuesday, you know that we answer questions from the BA membership that have been sent to safetyexchange@brewersassociation.org. You're welcome to use the link that's right in the forum email message to do that. Please continue to do that, and our 13 members of the Safety Subcommittee are eager to answer any and all questions related to risk, worker well-being, and brewery safety. And if you had the chance to attend our open house earlier this afternoon, thank you for doing so. And finally, before we introduce our speaker, if you do have a question at the end of the talk today, please use the microphone. Everything's being recorded for a future podcast, which you can access through the thumb drive that was in your goodie bag when you registered. Well, let me tell you just a little bit about John Hofer. He's a founder of the Brewery Insurance Program based out of Orange County, California, where he now insures several dozen breweries, craft breweries. He got into the insurance business about 6 or 7 years ago, and 3 years ago began a program dedicated specifically to insuring breweries. He excels at structuring the proper coverage that's unique to companies in our business and that manufacture consumable goods. In his spare time, John likes hiking and, of course, the Southern California beers that he has close access to. Let's give a warm welcome to John Hofer, please.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you being here. I'm not going to stand up here. I kind of like to at least walk around a little bit. So thanks for coming. I know it's insurance. I know it's the last class of the day, on the last day. So I appreciate you being here, and I want to get want you all to get two things out of the class today. One is to make sure your brewery is properly covered, and secondly, that you know that the money you spend on your insurance premiums is going towards the proper coverage. So we're going to talk about the five standard policies that you have from when you start up to when you have employees. And then at the end, Scott Marks from the California Craft Beer Association is going to explain what we've done in California with an insurance council. And it would be a good roadmap for a lot of the guilds in either state or local. Before I start, can I ask how long you've all been in business? Can you, if you're a startup or have been in business less than a year, can you raise your hand? Excellent. And 2 or 3 years? Okay. And 4 or more? Got it. Okay. Now, these policies, all of you will have at some point. Some of you probably have them all already. But it's always good to know what you have, what you need, and where you're going. So when you have more employees with the startups, you're going to get into the work comp and the employment practice, which we'll see here. Let me show you what the five policies are. You have your liability policy and your property policy. Your liability and property policies are sold together as a package policy. You'll get this when you first start up and when you first get your space. Next is your commercial auto. Not everyone starts out with an auto, but if you self-distribute and buy a auto, you'll need this policy. It's a lot like the personal auto policy, but there's some differences that I'll go over. Then there's workman's compensation, which is, of course, when workers get hurt. Now, I've taken 3-day classes on work comp. This will be a little bit shorter. It's about a slide, and it'll go over the most important parts. And then next is employment practice liability. What employment practice liability is it protects you from the risks of employing people. That's wrongful termination, sexual harassment, and those types of claims. And we'll go over what those are. So we'll first start with liability. Liability protects you from lawsuits and claims arising from negligent actions by you to others that cause bodily injury and or property damage. So negligent action is a mistake. You know, you didn't have the mat out in front of the door to your tasting room. It was raining outside. It got wet. Someone slipped and fell. It's a negligent action not to have the mat there. To others, what that means is that it's not to your employees. It's a third-party coverage. Anyone outside of the brewery. This is customers. This is vendors or clients that come on site. And it includes damages and legal fees. So I took this straight from a policy. It's just an image of what you'll see on your policy. I want you to be able to open up your policy and be able to read your policy and look at it and know what it means. So this is what you'll typically see, and we're just going to dissect this and go through what's what. So we're going to start here at the top. General liability aggregate and products aggregate. Does anyone know what the aggregate is? Sorry? Yep, it's the total. This is what your policy will pay for the entire year. You have an annual policy. It's going to pay $2 million for general liability claims and $2 million for product liability claims in total. So that's $4 million. And that's what it will pay the entire year. And you'll notice it separates into general and products liability, and we'll go over what those are. Next is how it pays. So your standard policy is going to have a $1 million per occurrence limit. That's for each claim. So if you look here on the bottom, each occurrence limit. So if you have a claim that's $500,000, that's less than the million, it's covered. If you have a claim for $1.5 million, that's more than the occurrence limit, and you'll be short $500,000, even though the policy pays $2 million. So we'll talk about excess liability and what that means. But this is how the policy pays. It's a per occurrence. Personal and advertising injury has an occurrence limit, and all the other liabilities have an occurrence limit, and they add up to your aggregate. So let's go over the general liability. Now, first you have your premise. Your premise is inside your brewery, it's your tasting room. And so I gave the example of someone coming in and slipping and falling in your brewery. That is your premise liability. It also extends outside of your brewery, usually about 1,000 feet. So if someone is at a food truck and they slip and fall and trip over the curb in the parking lot, they're covered there as well. You're covered off-premise. What this does is, so if you're at a brew fest and you're changing out the keg and you put the keg just outside the booth, once again, trip and fall. Lots of trip and falls in insurance. There's no good examples. It's all about bodily injury and property damage. So that it's your on-premise and off-premise liability. A good example of property damage is, let's say there was a fire in your brewery and it spread to the suites that were next door or to a building that was next door. That's property damage to others. And so that's what your general liability will cover. And as you saw before, there's personal and advertising injury. So this is copy and trademark infringement. And there's a lot of talk about that in the brewer's craft right now, with so many brands. So this policy will cover you if there's a claim that says you infringed on someone's copyright, someone's trademark. This will respond to that claim and cover you. It'll pay all the legal fees and up to $1 million in damages. Now, if someone were to infringe on your trademark, this policy does not attack and go after them. Policy only responds to a claim that's on you. Next would be libel or slander, denigrating competitors or other companies or people. If you'll notice Greg Cook, when he goes around and talks, he says fizzy yellow beer. It's because if he said Bud Light, Budweiser has lots of attorneys, and they really like to sue people. So that's why one reason why we say fizzy yellow beer as opposed to actually saying Bud Light is because it would be slanderous when spoken and libel when written. Next is products liability. There's three types of products liability. First, there is defectively manufactured products, so a mistake in the manufacturing process. So let's say beer makes someone sick, a bacteria got in it. It got bottled and sent out. Person got sick. That's a product liability claim. And that has its own bucket, which was that $2 million in the aggregate. So there's $2 million general, $2 million product. This is the product liability bucket. Let's say there's glass in your bottle. The bottle capping machine is pressing too hard, and the inside of the lip is crumbling, and you're getting glass in your beer. The next would be defectively designed products. Let's say you create a recipe, and there's an unknown irritant in it. So the design is not as big of an issue as the defectively manufactured, at least for your industry. Another example might be if you design and create your own tap handles, and let's say it's too thin in the middle, and after enough pulling, it snaps and someone slices their hand open. That would be a product liability claim against you. The next would be a failure to provide adequate warning or instructions. I had a peanut butter cup ale last year, and so if you were to put peanuts in beer, you would need to have a peanut warning label so that if someone were allergic to the beer, to peanuts, they wouldn't drink it. So if you didn't have that label, that would be a and they drank it, that would be a product liability claim against you. The next that you saw on here, on that list, was what's called fire damage. Now, fire damage is inside your four walls. I talked about if there was a fire in your brewery and it started on fire, a suite next door, that was general liability. This is tenant's liability. This is your own space. Now, it wouldn't be your property like your equipment, because that goes on your property policy. But taking the landlord's building and putting it back into a shell with the roof and the stub to putting the restrooms back, that would be your responsibility. Unless in your real estate lease you have what's called a waiver of subrogation. And one thing I always do when I talk to breweries is I examine their lease. And most standard leases will have what's called a waiver of subrogation or a hold harmless. And that means that if there's a fire, even if it's your fault, the landlord's policy will take care of his building, your policy will take care of your equipment, and the insurance companies don't go after one another. So if you have a what's called a standard AIR lease, it's Section 8 of the insurance, and that will be in there. If it's a custom lease, you should really look, because typically this starts at like $300,000 in a policy, and depending on how big your space is, it might not be big enough. Next is medical expense. This is a no-fault, meaning it doesn't mean you had negligence. It's a don't-sue-me coverage. Someone comes in and slips. They need stitches. Their medical expenses are $1,000. The insurance company will give that person $1,000 for the medical bills because they'll be less likely to sue if they get their medical bills covered. They don't want to go through the hassle of the whole lawsuit if they haven't really been that damaged. If they had their medical bills taken care of, that's sometimes good enough. So it's a don't sue me coverage. Oops. Next is liquor liability. You'll notice liquor liability has its own aggregate. It has its own occurrence limit. So it has its own buckets. Now this policy will pay $6 million, $2 million for general, $2 million for product, $2 million for liquor. The primary concern is inside your tasting room. That's where you have control over how much beer your patrons are served. So if you overserve a patron, he or she goes out drunk driving, gets in an accident. Whoever's hurt by that accident can sue the drunk driver and you for overserving. Secondarily, there's patrons that can be overserved at a bar or restaurant where you distribute. It's not as much of a concern. It's more of a lawyers like to bring in as many people as possible for settling purposes. It is possible to be dragged into a lawsuit where your beer was served at a bar and it wasn't your issue for over-serving, but it was your beer. Maybe on a tap takeover. Maybe it's a 16% beer and the person weighs 100 pounds and one serving is over-serving. You can't, have three servings of it. So the primary concern with liquor liability, though, is inside on your premise. So these are additional liability coverages that are covered by endorsement. That means they have to be added onto the policy. So these are the most important and the ones I see most often. employee benefits liability. This protects against administration errors in the employee benefit program. So how many of you have health insurance programs? So you have 60 days in your contract to offer a new employee, a new full-time employee, health benefits if you have a group benefit program. Now let's say after 60 days, for some reason, the employee is not offered group benefits. The HR person is out, so someone just forgets. And on day 67 after employment, the employee's in a car accident. He wasn't offered health insurance. He says he would have taken the health insurance. Now he has no health insurance, and he's in the hospital. That claim's going to come on you because you didn't offer health insurance after 60 days, and that they are owed that. So this is maybe $150 to $300 endorsement, but it really covers you, especially if you have turnover or a multiple number of employees. Next is called hired and non-owned auto. So you can have autos that are owned by the company, but there's also hired and non-owned autos. Non-owned meaning your employees' autos, the owner's autos, and hired, obviously, if you go get a U-Haul truck and bring a bunch of kegs to a brew fest, it's either a hired or an auto that's not owned by your business but is being used in the course of business. So I'm an insurance broker. I drive to clients all the time, and if I get in an accident, I can be sued personally, but the company can also be sued because I'm driving for the purposes of business. So if you're self-distributing, especially, or really anyone, this should be on every policy ever written for any company. It protects you when someone else is driving for the benefit of your company. Next is umbrella and excess liability. So an umbrella policy, I had a call on this morning. A brewery called and said, I have a couple clients that are asking me to give $5 million per occurrence on my liability. And he right now has the standard policy. So $5 million means you need four $1 million layers for your umbrella policy. So what this does is an umbrella policy or an excess liability has $1 million per occurrence, $1 million aggregate. And to get up to that level that some of the clients want or your landlord might want, you need to buy umbrella policies to get to that limit. So if you have a $2 million umbrella policy, that means you have $3 million per occurrence, $4 million aggregate. And typically it's about $800 per million dollars. Next is cyber liability. Was I the only one in the room who had to get a new debit card because of Target? There were plenty of us. So cyber liability is big. As you'll see at the end, libel and slander online is a big concern. The insurance industry had a kind of a fit when Facebook and social media came out, because now there's so many opportunities for libel and slander in the company's name, with a 19-year-old running the social media campaign for a $10 million company. It can really cause problems. So sometimes, depending on the policy, libel and slander in social media needs to be on a cyber liability policy. The biggest issues with cyber liability is privacy. So if there's a skimmer on your credit card, or if an employee is stealing credit card information, you want a cyber liability policy. Because what happens if information is stolen? You have to notify the person. You have to give them 2 years of service like LifeLock, which costs about $30. For every record that's stolen, it's about $50 or $60. And if it's 100 people, that's expensive. If it's 1,000 people, it can be crippling. Employee privacy, that's your HR files. They can be online. They could be in a file cabinet. If they're stolen, this protects their identity as well. There's also transfers of this liability, like your point-of-sale system. If it's your point-of-sale system that's hacked, well, then it's on them. But if it's your wireless that's hacked, then it's on you. So there's a transfer of liability somewhere in there. And if you have the cyber liability, you just know you're covered. So let's talk about the premium. Liability premiums are based on revenue, and they're based on square footage. You have a rate. So let's say it's a $2 rate, and you pay $2 for every $1,000 of sales, of top-line gross sales. So if you have $1 million of sales at a $2 rate, that's, if my math's right, is $2,000. Now, it's not that rate is a blended rate, and there's also individual rates. On-premise has a higher rate because the person is in your place of business, and there's more exposure there. There's the general, and there's the liquor liability exposure. And then there's off-premise, which has a lower rate. So you always want to have those separate when you have your insurance quote. The next is your product liability, kegs and cans and bottles. You want to separate out your sales by those products because there's a different liability rate for each of those products. Sales are estimated at the beginning of the year, and they're audited at the end. So if you say you're about to have $1 million of sales this year, you're going to have your rate and you're going to have your premium. And at the end of the year, they're going to see if it was $1 million. If it was more, you pay an audit. If it was less, you get money back. But with the way brewers are growing, it's a good idea 6 months in, check. If you're going to $1.5 million of sales, you're going to have an audit. And if you're making payments on your insurance, it's much better to just increase the estimate, pay that additional premium over your payments, as opposed to get a big audit at the end of the year. Because you're also going to have a work comp audit, and the down payment for your policies is typically 15-20%. So to avoid a cash crunch, you really want to check in halfway through the year. Okay. So let's talk about property. Property covers fire, theft, explosion, vandalism. The way policies are written now, basically they cover everything except what's excluded. So what's excluded are things like earthquake, flood, war, acts of God, nuclear accidents, neglect of property. So let's say you have a piece of property that you leave outside in the rain for 2 weeks. You're going to do something with it, and it gets destroyed. Neglect of property is excluded. And in some areas of the country, wind is excluded. If you're in Florida or an area with tornadoes or hurricanes. So your policy pretty much covers everything except for what's excluded. There are some policy limitations. So if you have a homeowner's policy, I'm going to compare them to a homeowner's policy. So you have property on your homeowner's policy to cover your home and all your contents and all your stuff. But if you've ever been robbed, you know that there's a sublimit for jewelry. So there's like a $1,500 to $2,500 sublimit for jewelry unless you increase it. The same goes for breweries. There's things like property in transit, leakage, contamination, product recall. These are all limited unless you endorse them higher, or they might not even be on the policy. And we'll go over what those coverages are, but you want to be sure you know what those coverages are and what level they're set at, because you could find out you're not covered. Now we'll talk about valuation. There's replacement cost versus actual cash value. Replacement cost is on 99% of all policies I see. Actual cash value just means depreciated value. Replacement cost is what would it cost to buy it new. Selling price, this is for your stock. Big difference here. This is what protects your profit. And this is probably one of the more important endorsements I don't see on a lot of brewery policies. So if you have all your kegs or, you know, several pallets of bottles, and somehow they're destroyed, maybe the forklift drives into them, a selling price endorsement's going to pay you what they would have sold to the distributor or retail, depending on your mix of retail and distribution. If you have replacement cost on your stock, you're going to get time and materials. Whatever it costs to brew the beer, you're going to get. Selling price endorsement, whatever you sell the beer for is what you get. So you always want to protect your process, your profit. And the selling price endorsement's unique, and different carriers do it different ways. Some will give you the selling price on beers that are being barrel-aged and your finished stock, stuff that's in bottles and kegs. Some will do it through the entire process. Some, if you lose 10, 50-pound bags of grain, they'll give you the selling price on it and just back out the time and materials. So you always want to protect your profit as early in the manufacturing process as possible. And that's one of the biggest differences I see in brewery policies. Oops, there we go. So here's your standard property coverages. It's your building. If you own the building, you need to insure the building. And it's just a replacement cost. What would it cost to build the building again if it burned down? Tenant improvements and betterments. You're going to put in a bar. You're going to put in a cold room. Things that are built into the building and are really attached to the floor. That if you build that more office, if you put trench drains in, all the conduits you put for power, those are all tenant improvements and betterments. And you want to have those line itemed, and I'll show you why. Permanently attached equipment, you also want that line itemed. This is your brew house. These are your fermenting tanks. This is anything you have bolted to the ground, whether it's your glycol system, whether it's a filter. This is another line item you want to keep, and I'll show you why, because it can help you, breaking it out like this can help you lower your premiums. Next is what's called business personal property. This is pretty much anything that's not secured to the floor, that's not stock, that's not either raw materials or finished product. This is your forklift, kegs, desks, glassware. Business personal property is kind of a catch-all for anything that's not bolted and it's not stock. And all of this should be at replacement cost. Next is your beer products, raw materials, in-processed, finished goods. And that'll be a combination of replacement cost and selling price, as I talked about before. It's depending on when your selling price endorsement starts in your manufacturing process. Property in transit. Now, I see this a lot with keg leasing companies. They're going to want you to have property in transit coverage. This means that it doesn't necessarily have to be on a truck driving somewhere. If you have a keg out at a bar and it's in their cold room, that's property in transit because it's on its way back to you. It's in transit. So keg leasing companies are going to have required limits. If you lease $100,000 of kegs from them, they're going to want you to have $100,000 of property in transit. The other important part of this is if you were to get in a car accident and you had a box truck and you had $10,000 of property of beer in bottles, kegs, cans in the back of your truck and it spilled, that's not on the auto policy. That's on your property in transit. So you always want to know how much you can fit in one truck and have that on the policy. Because property in transit is different. And anything you lose in a car accident won't be covered on the auto policy. Let's see. Okay, here's some brewery-specific property coverage. These are endorsement. They have to be added. You have to discuss with your broker if you want these. I think I went two ahead. Okay, I did go two ahead. Equipment breakdown. What equipment breakdown is, it's the physical and financial damage coverage for your equipment. So let's say a valve breaks in your fermenting tank, and you're not going to be able to fill that valve until you get a new one. Now, you're not going to be able to fill that tank for 3 weeks. That's going to reduce your production capacity. Not only does that valve need to be replaced, which might be cheap, but the financial loss won't be cheap. And that is a business income coverage of equipment breakdown. So if your equipment breaks down and you have either to be shut down or have reduced capacity, your equipment breakdown and business income are going to cover you there. Now, this is also non-wear and tear. If you have something that's 10 years old and the life is 7 and you're getting an extra 3 years out of it, the replacement's going to be on you, as will the business income. Business income must be triggered by a covered loss. And I'll show you some covered losses in the next slide as well. So business income coverage is essentially net income coverage. It'll replace your net income. It'll pay ongoing expenses. Let's say you had a fire and you were shut down for 6 months. It will protect your net income. It'll pay your expenses. And there's two ways it'll do it. It can be limited by time, or it can be limited by a dollar amount. You can have what's called actual loss sustained for 12 months. It'll pay whatever loss you sustained for 12 months, or you can do it at a set dollar limit. You can say, I want $500,000 of business income coverage. And from what I see, I didn't write this down, what I normally see is 40% of your top line revenue is what you need for a year. And so if you want 18 months, which is what I'd recommend, 18 months of business income coverage, because of how long it takes to get new equipment, you're going to want 18 months. So if you have $1 million of top-line sales, you're going to want $400,000 for 12 months of business income. For 18 months, it's going to be $600,000. That's how I recommend covering your business income, is with the set dollar limit at about 40% of what your sales is. Extra expense. Let's say you had to move. Let's say you had to move your brewery. You were paying $1 per square foot where you were. Now you have to pay $1.20 somewhere else. That's an extra expense that's covered under your business income. The insurance policy will pay the difference. And next, this is especially important. This is another one that I see off policies all the time. It's called ordinary payroll. Your business income will cover the managers. It'll cover the owner. It'll pay their salaries. Anyone that's needed to get the brewery up and running, they'll pay for it because the insurance companies will pay for it because it helps things get up and running quicker, which costs the insurance company less. So they'll pay the salaries of the managers. What they often won't pay for, it's called ordinary payroll, are your brewers, your cellarmen, the servers, and they'll all have to be let go, which is a total intellectual property drain of your business. The people who know your recipes, the people who know your system. You want to have ordinary payroll on there so it'll cover those people. Now you can choose, if you're going to be out for 6 or 8 months, you can choose at that time to let some people go. But there's going to be a number of people you're going to want to keep on board that you don't want going to your competition. And so having ordinary payroll on your business income is another very simple and inexpensive endorsement that I see missing constantly. And I know we're going through a lot of information, but I wanted to get it all in. So here's some brewery-specific property coverages that are by endorsement. So off-site utilities. Let's say the water main in the street broke. Most of our water mains are like 80 years old. And you don't have water for a week. No water, no beer. No beer, no income. If you don't have off-site utilities, you're not going to have business income. Because as I said before, business income has to be triggered by a covered loss. So if the power's out, a transformer blows, and you don't have the second part, offsite utilities, business income, it's not going to be covered. Now, let me talk about direct damage. I was walking around the trade floor. And I saw all those electronic panels. Some of them are touch screens. Some of them are the automation buttons, and it transfers the beer from here to there. If you had a power surge, it could very easily blow that out. And those look expensive. I didn't talk to them, but they look expensive. If you don't have direct damage for off-site utilities surging, you won't have coverage for those pieces of equipment. So knowing the cost of those pieces, the replacement cost, is important. And you just simply increase direct damage off-site utilities to $10,000 or $50,000, whatever it is. And this is all in a checklist. Next is leakage. And I actually saw this happen. It wasn't a client. It's an East Coast brewery. I saw it on Facebook. A valve broke in a 90-barrel fermenting tank. All of it, except for 10 barrels, came out. And it was one of their high-end barrel-aged beers. Someone in Facebook was kind enough to do the math for them and said it was about an $89,000 loss. I don't know why they did that. I think they deleted it afterwards because they got some nasty comments on it. But leakage is the beer in process. Because property in the middle of manufacturing is at such a higher risk than, say, a forklift in the corner, there's limitations to it. Some policies don't even have leakage. Some of them have it at $5,000. What you want to know is your price per barrel, and the volume your biggest tank can hold, and multiply them together, and that should be the minimum of what your leakage coverage is. So leakage covers beer spilling out of containers. Because let's say your forklift drove into one of your tanks and pierced it. All that beer is going to come out. Insurance will cover the tank. It'll replace that for you. If you don't have leakage, it won't replace the beer. And if you don't have a high enough limit, it'll only give you what the limit is. So that's an important coverage. The next is contamination. Now, contamination is dicey because there's so many things you guys do that are unique. And you know, if you're making a sour and it contaminates your regular beer and you're actually doing that in the same building, now that's not a contamination that's going to be covered. But let's say your clean-in-place system malfunctions and all of a sudden you have a fermenting tank that has beer and caustic in it. Or let's say you don't make any beer with Brettanomyces and all of a sudden there's a contamination of a fermenting tank with Brettanomyces in it. Those would be covered. But if you have all your fermenting tanks full and then you decide to brew a Belgian beer and bring Brettanomyces into your brew house and it infects your tanks, that's your own business risk and that won't be covered. So every claim, some claims are always going to be unique and they're always going to be have to be investigated by the insurance company. So contamination is important. Contamination and leakage are often set at the same level, you know, the price of your most expensive beer multiplied by the volume of your biggest tank. And selling price endorsement, I already talked about. Always protect your profit. Have the endorsement start as early in the manufacturing process as possible so that you always get as much profit as possible. You don't want to spend all that time, energy, payroll just to get it back. You want to get the profit and the return you expect on your time. Okay, saving on your property premium. Property premiums are based also on a rate that's multiplied by $100. For every $100 of property, there's a rate. It's anywhere between 10 and 15 cents typically for breweries. So the way this works is that building rates are lower than business personal property or beer product rates because a building has less likelihood of being damaged compared to something else that's movable. Now, what I talked about before, you're having your tenant improvements and betterments as a line item, and your permanently attached equipment, which is your brew house, as a line item. These are given the building rate because they are fixed, and they're less likely to be damaged than, say, a forklift or your stock or you know bottled or keg beer. They're not going to be spoiled or any other damages. So, if you have those line itemed out and you write those into your policy, you'll get the lowest rate on what is probably the biggest investment in your brewery, all that equipment and all the build out. So that will help save you on your property policy. Another thing I see is that breweries are growing very fast, and if a broker doesn't call every 3 or 4 months, what's going to happen is you guys are going to add more tanks or you guys are going to add more property somewhere. And you're not going to have coverage for it. On a policy, there's automatic coverage for 90 days, typically for $500,000. After those 90 days, you're supposed to have added it to your policy. That falls off. One thing I always do is call or email my breweries in 3 months increments and say, have you added any property? I send out 30 emails pretty much in 1 week for the breweries, and they 10 of them come back. Yeah, we've added this. You know, yeah, we just got six more 30 barrel fermenting tanks. Those need to be put on the policy within that 90-day period, and so you want to be sure of that. All right. Giving me fits here. Oh, there it is. So, commercial auto coverage. So, we've gone through liability, we've gone through property. Commercial auto coverage. Now, commercial auto is also a liability coverage. It's bodily injury or property damage to others, but driving in a car. Now, commercial auto has what's called a combined single limit for bodily injury and property damage, compared to, say, your personal auto, which you'll often see 100, 300, 100. What that means is 100,000 per person, 300,000 per accident, $100,000 for property. That is it's called split limits. This is called combined single limit. You want to get $1 million. It's possible to get less, but the premium is really in the lower limits. Increasing it's not that expensive. Uninsured and underinsured coverage, especially in California, where 20 to 30% of drivers are either uninsured or underinsured, and I'm sure it's a big statistic elsewhere in the country. If you're hit by someone and it's your expensive $40,000 box truck, and they have the minimum limits, which in some states is $5,000 or $10,000 of property damage, it's not going to replace your total car. You want to have uninsured and underinsured coverage. Like I said before, it does not cover what's ever in the back of your truck. Doesn't cover property in transit. If employees are injured in an accident, it's a work comp claim. It's not on their health insurance. It's just like if they were in the brew house and dropped a keg on their foot. It's getting in a car accident, it's work comp. Hired and non-owned auto, I talked about that before. If you have a commercial auto policy, it goes on your commercial auto policy. If you don't have autos, it goes on your general liability policy. Best practices for lower premiums. Checking MVRs and having drivers with clean records. A brewery with a driver that has a DUI does not get good rates. So keep them off. Now, actually, if it might not be their job to drive, but they still might drive either their own auto to a brew fest, or maybe one day they're covering for someone. They're still allowed to drive, and if they get in an accident, they'll still be covered. But it's not best practice to have them as a listed driver, and that's their duties. Workman's compensation. So employers have an obligation to take care of a worker due to injury. There's no limit on the medical and disability. They're always going to be covered for whatever happens, as well as mortality. The policy itself is actually really simple. It's not a complicated coverage. What's actually complicated about it are the claims. And that's where you have your three-day classes on all that can go on in a work comp claim. It's pretty much just a rate times payroll. And they vary from state to state. In California, it's anywhere between $6 and $12, especially if you're a startup, per $100 of payroll, which is pretty high for some areas of the country. I have a brewery in Virginia. It's 85 cents for a brewer. It's 15 times more in California than it is for Virginia. Texas is like $4 to $6. So there's a range wherever you are in the country. And here's how you save on your premium for work comp. I know there's been several safety classes many of you probably attended. If you're doing the work for safety, and you're doing inspections, and you're doing trainings, and you have your training logs, and you have your grid that shows, you know, the tasks that people do and what kind of dangers there are, and you have your training, you want to show that to your work comp carrier. And when you're going out to quote and getting several work comp quotes, you're going to want to show the work you do, because underwriters don't assume in your favor. So you're going to want to show all the work you do. And that's what helps lower premiums, because underwriters, when they know, they don't guess. And when they don't guess, it's good for you. Now, employment practice liability. This is another policy. Another policy that's based on the fact that you are supposed to provide a workplace that is safe mentally and physically for people to work. So here's the possible claims: wrongful termination. Let's say in your employee handbook, it says that when someone does something wrong, you write them up once. The second time is another stern warning. Third time, you're fired. You do that for one person, and they get two warnings. Someone else does it, and you don't like them as much, you fire them. They're not being treated the same. It's wrongful termination, even in an at-will state. Hostile work environment. That's just, you know, employee abuse. Discrimination for age, gender, race, etc. harassment, sexual or otherwise, and wage and hour issues. Wage and hour means I'm not paying you overtime correctly. You don't get to take your lunch. You don't get a 15-minute break every 4 hours. And that can add up over time. Now, wage and hour, if you just look down there on wage and hour defense, in California especially, and all over the country, it's a big issue. Because once someone goes to a lawyer and says, I didn't get my overtime correctly, the lawyer says, how many employees do they have? Why don't we check them all? And then you have a class action lawsuit or 20 lawsuits. And that's a defense only. So going back up here to first party. First party is two employees harassing each other, a supervisor and someone else, or you know, two employees. That's standard. Here's the endorsement. Third party coverage. Let's say, I don't know, you're at a conference for a week, and there's lots of beer, and there's lots of parties at night, and things go on that go on when you have alcohol and 9,000 young men and women. Things can happen. Or let's say you have a distributor that comes in that harasses the receptionist in your office, and you say, don't upset that distributor. That's a lot of our business. That's sexual harassment. So third party is your employee harassing someone else harassing your employee, and you basically telling them to take it. So it's there are exposures that are in inside out or outside in. If you remember 20 years ago, if you walked into a auto repair shop, they used to have calendars up of ladies, and they don't do that anymore. That was a third-party sexual harassment lawsuit. That's why you don't see it anymore. Wage and hour defense we talked about. Now, employers often don't purchase this coverage because they feel it's expensive and it won't happen to them. And we have 10 people in our insurance agency, known them for 5 years at least, 5 and 15. I don't have an EPLI policy. I recommend it for everyone, but frankly, I don't have one because we've known each other for so long and we follow our handbook when we have to terminate someone. So it's a risk versus reward. This is where, in insurance, you really need to take a look and say, you know, do I want to retain this risk or do I want to transfer it? In your business, I would transfer it more often than not. Transfer meaning buy the policy. 80% of all cases are won by the employee. Average cost of a claim, including legal fees, is $100,000. So it's definitely an important coverage. Okay. Scott, before we take a couple questions, Scott, did you want to talk about the Insurance Council and how it's probably a good roadmap for others? Sure.
Good afternoon. I'm Scott Marks with the California Craft Brewers Association. We are the association guild in California that represents craft brewers there. I am not personally in the insurance business, but I am in the business of providing benefits to my brewery members. And I've gotten a lot of feedback from our brewery members asking for some sort of insurance benefit or some sort of a insurance plan that identifies them, that really tailors to them. And so one way that we were able to do that is to create what we call the Insurance Council. And the Insurance Council is made up of four allied trade member brokers that we were already doing business with in California. And they make up our network, the distribution network, if you will, of this program throughout the state of California. This is a fairly new program for us, but it's already proving to be somewhat successful. And really the key to that success are the brokers, because they are invested already within the industry and they already provide a great product. So beyond that, it came down to creating a product that was specific specifically designed for the small to medium-sized breweries. So the larger breweries are pretty much already have a pretty good deal with insurance because they can do whatever they want in order to get their insurance coverages. But so we created Brewery Plus. It is somewhat of an affinity program, but it really is just providing a benefit to our members. And that's pretty much it. And I think that pretty much covers it. I will be around after the presentation, so if you have questions for me, I know you're not all from California, but at some point down the line, if you have a pretty good network of insurance brokers, carriers that your guild works with, then there is the possibility of potentially creating a program like that within your own state.
Yeah, it's a great program. It was very creative that they got the carrier and multiple brokers together instead of a lot of associations, brewer or otherwise, that just get one person and then it changes every 3 years. They really put a lot of thought and effort into it. And it's one of the most creative things I've ever seen an association or guild do. Do you guys have any questions on? I know it's a lot of information. And if you wouldn't mind asking at the microphones, because these are recorded.
Yeah, hi there. You mentioned property insurance if you own the building or if you're renting out the building. What if you're constructing a new facility completely? Is there any additional or different policy
sure,
coverage you'd recommend?
Absolutely. Because a building being built has a lot more risk going on. It's called a builder's risk policy, and it covers the property while it's being built, and it's a separate coverage, and it takes you from where it's dirt to where you put your standard property and liability insurance policy. It bridges the gap. Absolutely. Oh, go ahead.
Kind of a two-part question.
Sure.
Here at the conference, I think I spoke with people from BrewPack Nationwide,
yep.
Wayland, Cincinnati. Now I'm hearing from you. So it kind of brings in the question, how competitive are these programs, one from another?
Sure.
And what can an agent or broker do to add value so you don't do as much shopping around, such as safety inspections or other things they offer?
Absolutely. Good question. So it is getting competitive out there. There are more carriers coming online. Allied World that has Brewery Plus is the one in California that will be spreading. Brewery Pack is a great carrier. Cincinnati, I've just been looking at their policies, and it's getting competitive out there, and you have some really good policies to go after. Whalen is he uses Hanover. They also have a craft beer program, and a lot of brokers can get Hanover as well. He's been around a while, and definitely respect him. Brokers should definitely help you with safety. They should help you with technology so that you can get certificates of insurance easily. They should be able to help you with HR. They should have a lot of resources that's more than just price shopping and then I'll see you in 9 months. You want to have some real help in the HR and safety area especially. So some brokerages like myself, we have a claims manager and risk manager on staff, helps manage claims, help manage risk. It's and I know Whalen, Matt worked with Whalen and still does for many years. Good brokers know that it's more than just a premium, that when you have a client for 10 years, that's when your business is stable, not when you're always trying to go out and get new clients. So look for a broker that does business right and not only gets you a good price, but gets you good value for your money. Yes?
Could you touch on director and officers policy?
Absolutely. Thank you. Actually, I meant to include that with the employment practice because it works together with the employment practice. Directors and officers, because you're not a financial institution, it doesn't have a lot of the financial aspects of directors and officers. So you have your employee handbook, and it says you're supposed to follow these rules when you terminate someone or when something happens like sexual harassment. You're supposed to follow these certain rules and guidelines. And if you don't, if a director or officer of the company doesn't, not only is there an EPLI claim, an employment practice claim, but it can be a director's and officer's claim as well. It's a second cause of action. And I always sell my employment practice policies with a combo D&O, directors and officers, because it's a pain point for a lawyer to find. You have an employment practice policy, but you don't have a DNO, so let's figure out if any of the directors and officers screwed up in how they administered the discipline. And they can you have the insurance company covering you for employment practice, but you'll be drowning in legal bills for your directors and officers. So, thank you. That's a good question.
Can you talk a little bit about the best way of mitigating the risk associated with unpaid or volunteers working in the brewery?
Absolutely. So I've gotten this question before, and volunteers will rarely ever be covered by your insurance carrier, by the work comp carrier. Volunteers are for churches and nonprofits where they're not doing manufacturing, where they're not helping you bottle, or they're not helping you keg beer. It'll be very difficult to call your insurance carrier and say, can I get a volunteer's endorsement for my manufacturing business? It'll be very difficult. So often they're not covered. You can have a waiver signed. It doesn't necessarily mean it holds up because it's getting free employment. And if they want to sue, I doubt it will hold up. I know it goes on a lot, and if you have a claim, I don't expect it to go well with volunteers. It's very difficult to cover them. You can get kind of these mini-med policies that a lot of nonprofits have, where it's $35,000 of medical coverage if someone were to get hurt. That'd probably be the best way. But in terms of something actually really bad happening while they're volunteering, it's going to be a very difficult situation because there's not a lot of volunteer coverage for manufacturing companies. That answer your question? It's not satisfying, but it is that's as far as I've seen it. Yes?
Along those lines, how about with an intern from a local university working at your brewery?
Okay. Yeah, that's an interesting question. So it would be an unpaid intern. It would work along the lines of a volunteer. I would specifically ask the insurance carrier that specific question, and I'd also talk to the school on what they provide, because the school might provide some sort of coverage, some health insurance coverage. That's how I would try to get it covered elsewhere, as much as possible. Well, thank you. I know it's a lot of information. If I'll be here, any questions after the fact. Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.